And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu, live from Montreal Trudeau Airport. Good morning, Arpin.
Good morning. So yeah, if you hear some background music, maybe some flight announcements, we are trying to get this podcast in before we leave for Chicago, onward to Tampa for game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final, a game that exists because Josh Anderson scored in overtime in game 4 to extend this series. We were both at the Bell Center last night. We were both going on very little sleep. So quite a night at the Bell Center in front of quote-unquote 3,500 fans who made a lot of noise. Very, very tense game. And frankly, if I got to be honest, the Canadians didn't play all that well.
No.
They really, for a team that had their season on the line in the Stanley Cup final, did not really bring the level of intensity or efficiency that I expected from them.
Well, and you know what? I think that to a certain extent, it's good news because you know how they say, oh, well, I remember after the first game, I think it was, Luke Richardson said, well, the good news is that we did not play our best game. They had lost at that point, obviously. Mm-hmm. But after their first win, they still haven't played their best game, far from it. So I think that if they can rely on any silver lining and say, well, we can come back into this thing, that's exactly it. Because you look on the other side. I mean, Nikita Kucherov has been producing, but it's not as if...
He's not dominating.
He's not dominating. Braden Point is not dominating. Steven Stamkos is absolutely non-existent. I mean, we only see him like on the power play. So I think that the two factors that really come in for the Lightning is their defensive work and how they've been able to neutralize Montreal and the play of Andrei Vasilevsky, especially in the first three games. But I think that the Canadians are not necessarily like they're bending but not breaking when it comes to facing the Lightning's offense. It's their own offense that needs to come to life. It was opportunistic last night, which is great, but obviously they'll need to find ways to get into the slot more often, spend more time in the zone, more sustained pressure, because, gosh, they had all sorts of difficulties just to set themselves up in the offensive territory. And guys like McDonough and Eric Chernak were just very good at shutting them down.
Yeah, it really is a case of the Lightning being good at what the Canadians are good at on top of being the Lightning. Like this is the challenge for the Canadians in this series. But, you know, I agree with you in the sense that the Canadians are still alive after four games. They haven't played anywhere near as well as they can. Like, you would have thought that unless they play four perfect games, this would be a sweep. And the Canadians have played four highly imperfect games. Let's say three highly imperfect games out of the four. And
yeah, because game two was good.
Game two was good on their hand. But still, even then, game two was about simple, detail-oriented errors. And even game four, Romanov puts them up 2-1 in the third period, almost midway through the third period. Tyler Toffoli, veteran guy, cup winner that was brought in for his Stanley Cup experience, has a puck at the opposing blue line, has the option of trying to get it deep somehow. I mean, he was challenged, but still had an opportunity to get a puck deep, was not able to do it, whether he was not trying to do it or whether he just was prevented from doing it by the Lightning. Regardless, he had a puck, he had a chance to get it deep, didn't get it deep, and managed to, and then that puck winds up in the Canadiens' end and wind up scoring the tying goal. The Lightning wind up scoring the tying goal off of that. And if there's one theme in this series that we've seen from the Canadiens is just details that you should not be talking about in the Stanley Cup final. You shouldn't be talking about in the Stanley Cup playoffs, let alone the Stanley Cup final. The Canadiens continuously are doing these things and are still alive. So I have to believe that at some point, and frankly, it better be in game five or else the series will probably be over, that the Canadiens will find a way to stop doing those things, to stop making these mental errors that have cost them in every game that they've played. And put forth a performance that's worthy of the Stanley Cup final. I don't feel like the Canadiens have risen to the occasion thus far. But the one guy who I thought did rise to the occasion in that game was Carey Price. And that's a story, because it's not...
Well, it's funny enough, it was your story.
It was my story, yes. And it's a story just because of the way that he spoke after game three, taking ownership of how that game went and frankly how that series was going at that point, and Carey Price was his team's best player by far, I thought, in game four.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's it was subpar. I mean, you cannot hope to win Stanley Cup finals or any series when your goalie is sporting .835 save percentage, and that's what it was. That's where it was after three games for Price. And I think that he was not necessarily, I mean, he was not a difference maker in the first two games, but in the third, he was flat out not good. And I think that he was shaky, and you could feel it. I suppose that if we saw it, his teammates saw it too. But it was really a big bounce back performance from him in game four. And I think it bodes well for, I don't know if it was Patrick Roy being in attendance that made any sort of difference, but it really seemed to, if it's a turning point for him in this series, I think it bodes well for the Canadiens. I agree with you totally on that. The rest of the team needs to follow. You mentioned Tyler Toffoli. I mean, his blunder on the second goal, and frankly, his overall play, he's not, you know, he's been great this season, been a very productive player for the Montreal Canadiens. But, you know, every scorer or every player goes through highs and lows and slumps over the course of the season. And I think that we're seeing slumping Tyler Toffoli right now, which is unfortunate. It comes at the wrong time. But I mean, it's all part of line changes that were very intriguing from Dominique Ducharme. I know that some people said that... That they came way too late, but you know, I think that we both wrote I don't know if it was a tweet or somewhere else on the Athletic, but the fact that after game two, considering all the positives that took out of that game, there was no sense in really making drastic changes after that, and they go out and pull this let's call it a stinker in game three, well then it's easy to say, well, why did they wait so long? So, but I understand why they didn't do it after game two. But here we were yesterday with Duchamp making all those changes, Toffoli with Dano and Gallagher, and Anderson playing on the left side with Suzuki and Caulfield. So just let's start with those first two lines. What did you think of both of those?
Well, yeah, I was actually the one line that I kind of had, I don't know, I wouldn't call it an issue, but I had questions about. Was Anderson playing with those two guys? I feel like Suzuki and Caulfield are two guys who are really smart on the ice. They have a lot of awareness in terms of where they are on the ice, where everyone else is on the ice. And Josh Anderson has lots of gifts, but I don't think awareness is one of them. He's not really a guy who's fully in tune with where everyone else is on the ice. He's a guy who puts his head down and go. I mean, I was thinking this last night. If they're like, you always hear coaches begging their players, like, just go north, go north, go north. Yeah. So there's like one player that a coach probably says, you mind going east west like once in a while? It's probably Josh Anderson. You know, like just take a look around, yeah. Enjoy the scenery, see where everyone is. But he has one direction, and frankly, if you're a coach, you'd rather that than the opposite. And so he goes north, and if he has the puck, he's going to go to the net like he did in overtime, and that's really what he brings. And so, you know, for him to get two goals, both of which coming from his north-south nature, Nick Suzuki making an incredible pass on his first goal to find him as he's arriving in the slot going north. Funny thing about that play, while I was watching it develop, you know, Suzuki gave the puck to Caulfield, and Caulfield, I thought, was in a position to take a shot and decided to defer, which he's still doing a lot. And in that instance, I'm like, man, you should probably shoot that, you know, like, yeah. Just shoot that puck. Turns out was a good decision because Suzuki took it and made the pass that he made to Anderson. And what was the other line you asked me about? Sorry, I forgot.
Well, the Toffoli, Dano, and Gallagher.
Toffoli, Dano, Gallagher. Yeah, it's Toffoli's. I thought Toffoli was better in that game, aside from the detail that we mentioned earlier. But I thought Dano had a fantastic game. I mean, penalty killing aside, like even penalty kill, obviously he had a great game. Along with everyone else who played on the penalty kill, we're going to get to the guy who was added to that penalty kill unit in a second, but. I thought Dano and Gallagher really brought it in that game. I thought they were really good. Toffoli's still trying to figure things out with those two guys, even though he's played with them before earlier this season. But, that's another thing that I think the Canadiens can hang their hat on, is that they haven't gotten anything from their leading goal scorer yet. There's, no. It really hasn't been a threat, let alone actually producing. You want him to be threatening in certain situations. He hasn't done that yet, and you got to imagine at some point he will. But the big decision that Ducharme made that I was really impressed with, because I hadn't thought of it, I hadn't considered it, was to put that Evans line together, Lekkonen and Byron Evans, from when they were, you know, in Edmonton when they played super well. They did exactly what Ducharme wanted them to do. They played exactly the way Ducharme described the way that they play prior to the game. And I thought that was like a somewhat outside the box thing to introduce in an elimination game, to go back and think of, you know, two games in Edmonton, like, which was like another world ago. It's like to think back to what they did against McDavid. Actually, no, those were in Montreal, if I'm not mistaken. But anyhow, I thought it was a really good idea. As soon as he mentioned it, I was like, you know what? I never would have thought of that, and that's why he's the coach and I'm not. And I thought that line played fantastic, and Evans in particular on the penalty kill was really, really good.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, that was a smart move, I thought, because when you look at the matchups, I mean, they faced a lot of the Yanni Gourde line, and I think that was the game, the one game where, well, physically, you know, there were scrums involving Gourde and Goodrow every now and then over the course of the game, but in between whistles, I thought that the Evans line did the best job so far of any line on the Canadian side to try to shut them down and make them less of a concern, because, you know, the playoffs are often, and I realize, you know, we always focus on the top players, but year after year, the third line on the championship team seems to be making noise, and it's no different so far with the way the Gourde line has played for the Lightning. So to have that Evans line step up and you know, and bother them the way they did, I think that was very good to see. It came at the expense of Kotkaniemi. Duchamp basically explained it as Kotkaniemi being a victim of the numbers more than anything else, more than having anything to say about his play. But one thing's clear is that there's nothing in KK's game that made him invaluable or
indispensable
yes. in the current context. And you look at guys, you know, Eric Staal might have had a bad game since the beginning of the playoffs. He's had bad shifts probably in every game. But overall, he brought a great deal of consistency on his line, and he could not be taken out. Lehkonen, Byron, very useful guys on the PK, good on the forecheck, bringing speed too. So if you want to bring in Evans, well, it just ended up that KK was the odd man out. And I think that what bothers people is that you put in the balance the fact that KK is as pure talent. He's young. He represents the future of the team. He's a third overall pick, all that stuff.
The second leading goal scorer in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. That too. But, you know, if you look at the way he's been, his level of effectiveness from game to game, I think that's where it doesn't quite add up.
But well, he was terrible in Game 3. I mean, that was his worst game of the playoffs, I thought, in Game 3.
Yeah.
He was really bad.
Yeah, but he's been... I thought that there's been many games lately where he just didn't have any impact, you know? And do you think that there's... I don't think that there's going to be any scar effect on that, if there's going to be any long-term impact to that decision. But do you see any more significant meaning to the fact that in a do-or-die situation, Jesper Kotkaniemi in his third season in Montreal is not one of the 12 forwards that the Canadiens go with?
I don't think so. Listen, he turns 21 today. So...
Wasn't it yesterday?
Or yesterday?
Yesterday, yeah.
Anyhow, he's 21 now.
Yeah.
Regardless. So, you know, he's kind of in a situation, he's going to start to become in a situation where, you know, using his age, which I always do, I always talk about his age when I evaluate his play, I always keep that in mind, that he's 20 years old, or he was 19 years old, or he's 18 years old, and it shapes the way I look at everything he does, is like, where should he be at this age? And I've always considered him to be ahead of where he should be at that age.
Yeah.
And I still do, frankly. I mean, he'll be 21 all next season, you know? So it's like, he's still a 21-year-old player. But you start, when you hit 21, it's reasonable to expect, when you're a high draft pick like him, to have, I mean, Cole Caulfield's 20 years old as well. They're born 6 months apart, 7 months apart. So it's a situation where, you know, it's going to have to come. And it's not like he had a terrible playoffs. It's not like he's been bad for a long time, and that's why he came out. He's had effective stretches in the playoffs, but it hasn't. The consistency is not there yet. You know, I think what's been an issue the last 2 years for him is just he doesn't seem to have a clearly defined role. And the role on this team during this playoffs was to play on this forechecking line and go and dump pucks in and go and hit guys in the offensive zone. And if you get the puck, great, and if not, at least make a physical investment on the opposing team. And he was hit or miss with that role. But with his size, and maybe that is somewhat the role that they see him playing at some point. So you got to show some effectiveness. You know, I remember he mentioned at one point, you know, while they were playing pretty well against Vegas, I thought they had a number of pretty good games, and he was like, you know, we're getting in on the forecheck and we're creating chances off of that. And he was like proud of it, but it's not nearly consistent enough. And I don't want to speak in the past tense because we might still see him in the series, but you know, consistency has been a thing for him, but that line was getting stale as a whole. Like, I mean, it's no surprise that Anderson and Byron wound up on two separate lines also. You know, that line was just completely dismantled because, you know, it was a bit of a mishmash. It had a bit of a meh mandate, you know, like a mandate to go and just forecheck. Hockey player gets excited to be like, oh, I'm going to go forecheck tonight. I'm going to be really good on the forecheck. You know, it's like so. But having said that, I mean, you know, I think it was the right call to take him out of the lineup. I found he was really not good in game three and hadn't been all that effective in the first two games either. So we'll see where it goes. But good on Jake Evans. Every time he gets in the lineup and every time he's given an opportunity, he takes advantage of it. That penalty kill to open overtime, he was a big factor in that.
Yeah.
You know, offering a right-handed face-off option, you know, was really a key player for Dominique Ducharme. And I thought that was good to give him that vote of confidence because every time he's gotten that confidence from the coach, he's shown up. And he's delivered. And he delivered in game four.
He ended up playing more than 16 minutes yesterday. So that's quite good. And you mentioned the PK. I mean, you wrote a story about Carey Price. My story was about the PK, the penalty kill, because that's ultimately what kept them alive. I don't think that anybody thought that they could survive 4 minutes of penalty kill against a team that's so lethal on the power play in such a crucial time. I mean, it was, you know, it was next goal wins it all for Tampa. And plus, on top of it, I mean, it was Shea Weber in the box, and Shea Weber's been such a great contributor on the penalty kill. Weber had a really odd game because he was fumbling the puck early on. He was struggling with the puck, but at some point he caught fire. I mean, I think that the big check he gave Braden Point in the second period, when Point got out of the penalty box, seemed to completely change the nature of the game. You were saying earlier how it didn't have the whole series didn't have a Stanley Cup final feel to it. I feel from that point on, after that hit from Weber on Point, it raised the bar of the whole game, raised the level of intensity, raised the level of involvement of the whole team. The building got fired up for the rest of the game. But there he goes. After that, a fluke incident, you know, his high stick on Palat, which was clearly a penalty. I mean, you could not avoid that. But he was in the box for 4 minutes, and the whole time, it was Ben Chiarot and Joel Edmondson that killed the 4 minutes without being replaced once. At some point, Price made a save on Point. There was a whistle, and Romanoff and Petrie jumped on the ice. But then the Lightning called a timeout. So it enabled Edmondson and Chiarot, gave them time to regroup and catch their breath, and out they were again. So that was really a gutsy effort from them. And from the group of forwards too, you mentioned Denner, who had a strong game, Evans, Suzuki. Suzuki had the winning goal on his on his stick earlier in a shorthand chance. So, I mean, that to me that was the most impressive part of that game, because honestly, I didn't think they would survive it.
No, I had my doubts. I mean, 3 minutes to start overtime, and even the minute to finish the game. I thought the minute to finish regulation was actually the most dangerous part, because, you know, everyone makes a big deal about starting a period on the power play, but I kind of feel I'd rather end a period on the power play in terms of fatigue, and I know the quality of the ice is not great, but still, I feel like players are more prone to mistakes towards the end of a period, so that to finish regulation and get out of there, and then obviously the 3 minutes to start overtime was something. That was a really, really great effort. For them to get, I mean, at least tied for the best chance on that power play. Yeah. With Braden Point had a good chance towards the end of the, on the backhand towards the end. But otherwise, that Suzuki chance from Deno was at least tied for that best opportunity. So that's a remarkable thing. And, you know, Nick Suzuki, just to reiterate, how he rises to games. That guy has a gear in him that's pretty special. I feel like I don't think he's ever going to be a superstar player in the NHL, like on a level with Braden Point or Kucherov or whatever. But he's going to be really good for a really long time, and like and he's going to be good in, like, I think he'll be like in the tier of like Saku Koivu, in the sense that really, really good player, but like hyper competitive and able to like play, you know, play his
which
best.
Saku, because the Saku before is cancer, Saku before his knee injury. I mean, at the beginning, it was a different player than the Saku that most people remember in the mid-2000s.
He was never a superstar tier level. Even when he was leading the league in scoring when he got his knee injury, you know, no one looked at him as like a top five or top 10 player in the NHL, even then. I mean, if he had done that for 2 or 3 years, then yes, he would have gone into that class of player, but he was seen as a widely respected, very, very good player for the majority of his career. But a guy who, in the playoffs, you wanted that guy on your team.
For like, sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's just that Suzuki is in his second season, and pretty much every game, he gives you those wow moments that, you know, that display of skill that's just, that sets him apart from almost all of his teammates. I mean, sometimes Caulfield will wow you. We spoke on this podcast about Joel Armia sometimes when he does his Armia things.
Uh-huh.
He did some yesterday, especially prior to his penalty. But, I mean, Suzuki's in his second year. So I'm not saying no. He might not be in the Braden Point level, but I remember Saku more for his courage, his dedication, the fact that he was going to war every single night, but he would, in his own way, he was a little bit more of a Gallagher than a Suzuki. And I think that
comparing their styles of play, I'm comparing their status in the league.
Yeah, I know.
That's what I'm saying.
I know, but when you show the level of skill that Suzuki shows in his second season as often as he does, to me, it suggests that his status in the league might be a tidy bit higher than what Saku ended up bringing. In any case, I think it's extremely promising for the Canadiens. It's the biggest takeaway from those playoffs. To me, it's the fact that he keeps rising to the occasion and stepping up as their best offensive centerman.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so what they'll need going forward is for Kotkaniemi to become 1A, 1B, a 1A, 1B situation, which right now we're not seeing. I don't think the ship has sailed at all on that, but we'll see. So let's quickly sum up for game five, because our flight's going to board soon. We're heading to Tampa. We're crossing a border today. This is exciting.
Yes.
So game five, What has to happen for this series to come back to Montreal?
I think that they need to score the first goal. It's a cliche, but I think that it makes a world of difference for them. I think that they have to start. The Canadiens have had success in these playoffs because whether they score in the first period or not, when they play well in the first, it sets up their game. And I feel like overall against the Lightning, they've not been able to do that. And the Lightning has been dictating the pace every single game in the first period. And that needs to change. I don't know to which extent they're going to be able to do that in Tampa with the atmosphere there, with the line change on the Lightning side. But their best chance is that's where it is, because you cannot just rely on Carey Price like they did last night in the first period to stay alive. So they need to recapture what made them successful in the previous series and get that feel early on in the game. To me, that's the biggest aspect.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think this is the real beauty of putting the Evans line together in game four, is that it really allows the Canadiens to navigate the matchup situation in game five a lot easier. Having Ducharme behind the bench on the road will help them navigate the matchup situation a lot easier. But, you know, I think, you know, they need to get, like, just an across-the-board performance from their forwards that they haven't gotten in this series yet. And it's really, you know, to have, like, consistent attacking, like they did in Game 2, just take the brutal errors out of the Game 2 performance. And I think that's what they're going to need, because that Lightning team, they've now gotten their little wake-up call that, even though they played well, they got goalied, they got whatever, they can win the cup at home. It's going to be a highly motivated group. Canadiens really have to come out with a very efficient, tight, proper road game, and they're gonna need to get some important goals. Like, getting those two goals from Anderson were important, but a guy like Gallagher, a guy like Toffoli,
Petrie,
even, you know, I mean, they need their offensive guys to produce some offense and have everyone play the type of defensive hockey or hockey on the defensive side of the puck. I don't want to say they play defensive hockey necessarily, but, you know, sort of the efficiency and the responsibility that we saw through the first three rounds in one game, which we haven't seen from beginning to end of any game in this series. So I think if they can do that, and obviously Carey Price has to play similar to how he played in game four and has to even elevate from that. But, you know, ultimately their ability to make history here and come back from a 3-0 deficit rests largely on Carey Price's shoulders. But if I'm the Canadiens, I'm feeling pretty good that they have a win under their belt and they still haven't come anywhere close to playing their best game. So no, that's what I would hang my hat on and say, okay, well, the next game's going to have to be that.
Yeah, Dominique Ducharme has talked about being perfect or playing the perfect game, aiming for the perfect game. It's time that they get close to that.
Yes. So listen, we're going to jump on a plane and go to Chicago, hang out there for a bit, go to Tampa, and we will be live on site at Amalie Arena for game five, where the Canadiens have their season on the line for a second consecutive game and for the fifth time in these playoffs. So we will be back with Le Sport Athletique in French. I'm not sure when. We're going to have to see. Maybe after game six.
Well, it's going
to
be after...
Maybe after game five, I mean, or...
We'll keep you posted.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted. We don't know yet. But anyhow, until then, you can read Marc-Antoine, myself, and all our great hockey writers and all our great writers across all sports at The Athletic. If you have not yet subscribed, what are you waiting for? You can go to theathletic.com/athletic support. theathletic.com/athletic support as I speak over the nice lady at Trudeau. So everyone, have a good day. We'll speak to you soon.
Bye.